from Illinois Soul. This is Dialogue. I'm Patricia Bradford. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. Red Lobster. Once a global chain with more than 600 locations, filed for bankruptcy last year, the company has since closed dozens of locations, including five in Illinois, those being in Danville, Peoria, and Burbano. 22 locations remain open across the state, including Champaign, Springfield, Bloomington, and Rockford. Leading the company through its reconstruction is 36-year-old CEO Damola Adamalakin, born in Nigeria. Adamalakin moved to Springfield, Illinois as a child. He earned degrees from Brown University and Harvard Business School, and previously served as CEO of P.F. Chang's. He spoke with Brian Mackey on The 21st Show back on July 16th. Here's a bit of their conversation.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about your background and your Illinois connections. Take us back to that moment when you first come to the U.S. Again, you were born in Nigeria. I understand you grew up in Zimbabwe and the Netherlands. What is it like coming to Springfield, Illinois?
You know, it's very exciting for me and for my family. My parents worked very hard to bring us to the States, and it took a long time to bring that to fruition. We landed in Chicago at O'Hare Airport, and I was very excited to be in America. And we took a train down to Springfield, settled in, started school, and we're off to the races. So it was a very exciting time, and enjoyed my formative experiences in Springfield, Illinois.
So talk about what, say a little bit more about what you brought your family there. I mentioned your father was a surgeon. Was this part of his training, or was he coming here to work, or?
Yeah, my father was a neurologist. He practiced in Nigeria at the time, and he won an award. He helped to cure a disease in West Africa that was, they were calling it the shaking sickness. They didn't know what was causing it, but it was a neurological disorder that was being caused by what folks were eating. And he wrote a paper to help solve that issue and saved a lot of lives in the process. And he was published in the American Neurological Society. And that was his first time ever coming to the States, is when they brought him out to present his research and to receive an award.
So I want to ask you about, because I've heard you say in other interviews that your first Red Lobster experience was in Springfield. You would have been, I don't know what, 9, 10 years old. I took my own 9-year-old son to Red Lobster the other day, and I'm trying to imagine what he's going to remember about that visit when he's in his 30s. So with that big grain of salt, I wonder what you do remember about Red Lobster, in Springfield.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people tell me they had their first experience cracking crab legs or pulling lobster tails out of the shells at a Red Lobster, right? So it's not something that, you have a lot of meals, but it's a unique one, especially at that age, right? If you're taking photos with a lobster, if there's a lobster show that our staff will do. So it's a unique experience, and for a lot of people, they remember the first time they had these experiences with the food that we serve, crab and lobster specifically. So it ends up being a very memorable time. So, you know, I remember it very well. I remember the crab legs and the lobster tank, and, you know, I hear from a lot of people that they do as well remember their first experience at Red Lobster.
Yeah. Interesting times. That lobster tank is it's a fixture still. I mean, so all right. Talk about how has your family reacted to you getting this position at Red Lobster? Obviously, you were at P.F. Chang's before that, so this is not your first time leading a national company. But I wonder how they felt about this.
Yeah, they're very excited. They still love Chang's, but now they're Team Red Lobster fully. So, you know, I get a lot of photos from the family at visiting various Red Lobsters, and, you know, that's my immediate family, but also extended family, uncles, aunts, even family in Nigeria. They're all following very closely. So a lot of pride, a lot of excitement, and Team Red Lobster all the way.
All right, take me back. So you're growing up. When do you decide that business is where you want to spend your career, right? You have a medical history in your family. Was that something you ever thought about or were pressured to sort of go into medicine, for example?
No, my dad was very good about letting us all choose what we wanted, what we were interested in. His philosophy basically was whatever you choose, aim to be the best at it. So he was more concerned that we were doing our best and performing at a high level than he was trying to dictate what exactly we studied or spent time on. So I think that was a good philosophy. My brothers and my sisters and I all gravitated towards different things, but the goal was whatever you do, kind of give it your all and aim to be the best you can be. And so, for me, that was business. I got interested in early on, I did kind of the lemonade stand, lawn mowing thing with my brothers, but it wasn't until in high school, I won some money for giving a speech contest. At this point, I was living in Maryland. And it was a four-way rotary speech contest. I won $10,000 for giving a speech and decided I wanted to invest it. So I started reading up about investing. I started learning about, first, I tried to do real estate investing and realized the money I thought was all the money in the world was actually nothing if you're trying to do real estate. So I couldn't actually do anything there, but I learned I could buy stocks. So I opened a stock portfolio with the money and started reading about Buffett and all these great investors and talked to people in my neighborhood that knew what they were talking about, learned as much as I could and went down that path. And then by the time I got to Brown, I knew I wanted to study business and economics. I joined the Brown Investment Club and the rest was history.
I was a teenager once. I knew a lot of teenagers when I was a teenager. I'm getting to know a few now as my friends' kids are getting older. I can't think of a single one who thought, "Let me open a stock portfolio." What is it about you that you think drove you to do something so adult when you were still relatively young?
Yeah, I found business and finance exciting. I used to watch CNBC before school. So
Come on.
I thought
Is
the
that
whole thing
real?
was interesting. Yeah, that's real. That's real. I played football, so I was up early for training camps and all this stuff. My friends would sleep over and I had CNBC on in the morning. I just thought it was interesting, genuinely. So nobody forced me to. I thought it was interesting. And the idea of making a lot of money was interesting too, right? And you see some of these people and
Sure.
the things they were doing. So I just gravitated towards business. And once I learned how to think, I read a lot. There's a website called The Motley Fool that I used to read, and I'd watch NBC and listen to what they were talking about. And then I talked to kind of adults in my community that, my coaches and such that knew what they were talking about as well. And once I kind of learned the basics, I started just doing. I think you learn best by doing. And maybe, don't put $10,000 into it if you're 16, but at the very least, like a phantom portfolio or something like that can be very enlightening. So, but I did it with real money. And as a result, I really got into it. And then, this had been 06, 05, 06. So everything, the stock market was booming at the time. So I felt like I was making a ton of money and doing really well. And, positive reinforcement of success will help you fall in love with something even more.
Yeah, it's interesting that you had such a positive experience with the world of finance, because I think a lot of people of your generation would say the Great Recession is what they think of, and they have sort of a angrier orientation to that. So I guess maybe it was fortuitous you got into it a little earlier, maybe before the Great
To be
Recession.
clear, I got crushed in the recession like everybody else. My beautiful portfolio, it took many, many hits. But for me, by the time the recession came around, I was working at Goldman as an intern. I actually spent my first summer in New York on Wall Street during the recession. So at that point, I was less concerned about my little portfolio and more concerned about my career. And it wasn't clear that summer. A lot of internships got canceled. A lot of jobs got people got laid off, and it was pretty scary on Wall Street, but they didn't cancel my internship, so I got a first row seat, seat to all of that at Goldman that summer. So I saw it more. It was more sort of for me a learning lesson that shaped my career. Looking back, it just made me a better investor because I kind of saw how bad things can get.
Just a reminder, you're listening to Dialogue. We're tuned into a conversation with IPM's Brian Mackey and Red Lobster CEO, Damola Adamalakin. This conversation took place July 16th of 2025.
So I'm curious about how you become CEO of a company like this. I'm guessing it's not, you know, putting open to work on your LinkedIn page, despite the significant following you have, right? Fortress Investment Group comes to you, takes, you know, taps you for CEO. How does that actually work in practice, and why you?
Well, in life, you know, you get opportunities based on what you've done is how it tends to work. So you excel at one thing, other opportunities will arise. And, you know, that's my life even before the CEO gigs, right? I went to Brown because I did a great job in high school. I got recruited to Goldman because I did a great job at Brown. I got recruited to TPG because I did a great job at Goldman. I went to Harvard because I did a great job at TPG. Like that's life, is one step at a time. And just, you know, like my dad said when I was young, be the best at the thing you do and other things will come, right? So so that's it. In terms of this particular role, you know, I led the deal to buy PF Chang's in 2019 when I was working at a hedge fund in New York. And that business, it wasn't as dire as the bankruptcy, but it was going through a rough time when I took over. And we turned it around, right? We grew profits of that business by 50%. We grew sales to over $1 billion. We got through COVID stronger than the competition. So the results there dictated, you know, Fortress looked at the results there and asked me to do the same thing here, right? So again, it's just performance that creates opportunity, and you keep performing, you'll keep having new opportunities.
I grew up with a lot of people for whom going to Red Lobster was a special occasion, but I know it also has a particular significance and customer share in the Black community in America, right? It was in one of the Madea movies, even had a scene set there. Beyonce references it in her song Formation, which we cannot quote from on the radio, but people can look that up if they're interested in what she had to say about Red Lobster. And apparently that led to a sales increase. So talk to me about how you think about, you know, that particular relationship with the Black community in America.
Yeah, it's an important one. And to your point, it's longstanding. So, you know, Red Lobster was first founded and from the very beginning, and this has been the 1950s, 1956, from the very beginning, Bill Darden, who opened Red Lobster, was welcoming to Black diners when a lot of restaurants in that time and in that place were not, right? So Black diners were always welcome. Black staff was always welcome. So from the very beginning, there's been a understanding that it was a place that was going to have a good relationship with the Black community. And that has only strengthened over time to where, you know, like you said, we show up a lot in Black pop culture, whether it's Beyonce or people who worked here. You know, Nicki Minaj worked at a Red Lobster, Cardi B. You know, I had a chat with Charlamagne. He said he used to go there all the time with his friends. So there's a lot of, you know, cultural legacy with the Black community. It's something that we're proud of and we embrace. And you know, it's certainly something that you know, I'm happy to speak to and happy to be part of.
I wonder if you're willing to speak about how your own experience of being Black in America, although, you know, from initially from Africa, right? And how that has shaped your own life path and life journey.
Yeah, I mean, look, I my experience is unique. It's an international one, especially my childhood. That said, you know, coming to America at the age that I did, I went to schools that were very diverse schools. And in Springfield, I went to Franklin Middle School, which would have fed to Springfield High or Southeast High. And these are just very diverse schools, as anybody from Springfield can attest to. My experience was, always great with the Black American community. I played basketball, played football, so I spent a lot of time playing sports. Got into kind of the cultural elements, the music, and some other things. And that was true when I lived in Maryland as well. So it's always been an extremely welcoming community to myself and my family. Even though, you know, we moved here later, it's always embraced us from the very beginning. So on a personal level, it's a community that we love and we're grateful for as well.
Because, I mean, there can be that tension, right, between people who are immigrants from African countries and African-Americans whose ancestors experienced Jim Crow and enslavement and all that. There was a YouTube video I came across that, you know, tried to make a little bit of hay out of that. But is that, I mean, I guess, is that something you have ever had to deal with, or maybe it's not. Maybe you have not had that experience.
Yeah, I find it. I've heard that, but I think that's overstated. I think there's obviously a difference in experience, but it's not. I don't think it's conflict. I just think it's a difference in experience. And I actually think the communities learn really a lot from each other. You know, I learned a lot from my Black American friends, and I think they learned a lot. I had a friend, Zach Brown, that I played football with. He played in the NFL, but he'd come to my house and spend a lot of time with my family. And I think he learned a lot from, you know, our experience as well, right? So I think it's all about perspective. But in my view, it's a positive. It's just, you know, more experiences to learn from and to build together with. And so, and you know, look, Nigerians love Black Americans, and as far as I've seen, Black Americans love, you know, love the Nigerian community as well. So I think it's the tension's a bit overstated.
There are not a lot of times where a private equity company comes and takes over a business and it kind of gets like a positive boost in reputation always. There, you know, I think some people use the term vulture capitalism. Can you make a case in your view as to why, you know, private equity is maybe a net good? Because I think there are a lot of people out there who see it as a oftentimes the company that comes in to destroy and extract value. And, you know, maybe they say they're saving, but that costs a lot of jobs in the meantime.
Well, let me just start by saying those people aren't, they're not wrong in thinking that. That does happen sometimes. It totally just depends on the private equity firm. Like, they're not all the same. I know it's easy to kind of group them together, but they take different approaches. And some do take a very financial engineering approach of just trying to cut costs and build profit that way. I think it's a huge mistake in this business because ultimately, this is a business where the lifeblood is the guests, is guests coming into your restaurant. So if you cut costs and you don't consider what that does to the guests, and then guest count decreases, you're going to lose more than you gain. And I think people learned that the hard way, including the people who owned this business before. Now, the new owners, Fortress especially, have come in with a totally different mindset. They're investing. So they're saying, we're going to learn from the mistakes of the past, and we're going to actually invest to make a better business, create a better guest experience, remodel the restaurants, get some new dishes, invest in hospitality and our team members. So they're taking that approach, and it's going to have a wonderful payoff for them because that's how you build a great restaurant business is by investing in the guest experience and in the team member experience. So then depending on the private equity firm, if they approach it the right way, they can be a great positive because they can inject a lot of capital, right? They're giving me the money I need to remodel restaurants, to hire people, to, you know, improve the technology, to do the aesthetic redesigns I mentioned. So, you know, in this case, it's certainly a net positive.
Another thing a lot of business leaders have to deal with today that I'm sure they would rather not is politics, political considerations. You know, Red Lobster appeals to the to that broad range of customers. I saw somebody wearing a bright red Trump hat and some other people that, if I had to guess, I would guess were probably not Trump voters, when I was at the location the other day. How do you think about that? Do you sort of live in like fear that like, oh my goodness, I hope we don't become the next, you know, story on X, you know, YZ news network, in America's culture wars?
I consider ourselves a place where people can leave the politics and other sort of stressful issues at the door and come and have a good time. That's what makes us special. That's what people come to us for, is to enjoy, right? We're in a very unique business. We serve joy for a living. I know we serve food, but that's only part of it. What we do is we serve joy, right? So for us, we don't spend much time thinking about it because it's not what we do. What we do is we entertain people. We provide a great meal. We provide community. People can come in, talk, enjoy, have fun, have a drink, have some food. And that's why you'll see a diverse group of people in our restaurants, because it's not about anything but just having a great time.
That's a wrap on Dialogue this week. Our team includes Kennedy Vincent, Ariel Raveny, and me, Patricia Bradford. Reporting this week comes from Kennedy Vincent, Harrison Malkin, and Brian Mackey. The theme was composed by Lamont Holden. Dialogue and Illinois Soul are a part of Illinois Public Media, which is a service of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We'll have a dialogue again with you next week.